In 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue, and the world has never been the same ever since. Well, for a few centuries after that incredible voyage, the man who opened up the new world to the old world through his death-defying voyage was a hero. But in the last 40 years or so, somehow Christopher Columbus has been villainized. In fact, many places have even substituted the celebration of Columbus Day, which is a federal holiday, they've changed it to Indigenous Peoples Day. Scott Powell of the Discovery Institute has written a book on America's special days, including Columbus Day. And the name of his book is Rediscovering America, How the National Holidays Tell an Amazing Story About Who We Are. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point, and Scott Powell joins us on the program to discuss Christopher Columbus, the good, the bad, the ugly, and Columbus Day as well. And Scott, it's always a pleasure to have you on. Why do you think Christopher Columbus has been remembered by recent Americans in such a negative light? The guy risked his life, and he changed world history overall for the better. I mean, it led to the United States of America being created. Oh, that's it. They must not like America, the critics of Columbus.
Well, you have that right, Jerry. The reality is that we are in a spiritual battle, and that involves history and rewriting of history. We know from our Marxist enemies, if you will, whatever country has turned to Marxism has always, without exception, rewritten its history, divorcing the people from a memory of their history. So, in some ways, Columbus was an easy target because. Well, people didn't know that much about him. They heard about the abuses of his Spanish crew. But what he faced, first of all, he made four voyages in total. You know, his first one came in 1492, but he made three successive voyages in which he explored the Caribbean and the coasts of South America. He never actually saw or came close to what is now continental United States, but most of his voyages were in the Caribbean and along the coast of South America. And what he encountered, though, first of all, everyone should understand where Caribbean came from. The name Caribbean is named after the Carib tribe, which controlled much of that area. The Carib tribe was made up it was a tribe of cannibals. The men were cannibals, and they sought to slaughter other males on various islands. They went from island to island, conquering them, and they ate the flesh of the men. They enslaved the women, and that was the story of the Carib tribe, really. That's what they're famous for. Now, most people are clueless about that. That's how the Caribbean Sea was named. It was named after the Carib tribe. And it was not that different in their encounters in South America. You had three major civilizations. You had the Aztecs, the Incas, and the Mayan tribes, and all of them believed in child sacrifice and were really quite brutal. So when Columbus went into this hostile area, he took great risk, and his crew, which was all Spanish, he was supported in his voyage by Ferdinand and Isabella of Spain. He himself was actually from Genoa. Italy didn't exist at that time, but he was from the port of Genoa, which is now part of Italy. And Columbus was a remarkable man. Just to give the audience a little bit more color on him, he was raised in a nominally Christian home, Catholic in those days, of course. But he had a passion to go to sea, whereas most people want to live on land. Columbus just wanted to live on ships. He loved ships, and so he contracted out with numerous ships. And in the Eastern Mediterranean, Columbus encountered the militancy of the Muslims because they had blocked the overland trade routes to the Far East, and those trade routes were very important for the commerce and the welfare of the Mediterranean, the European Mediterranean countries that did a lot of trading. And so Columbus decided that because he believed that the world was round, you know, the Flat Earth Society was sort of phasing out by that time, and he was of a mind that the world was round, and that if he sailed west across the ocean, he would likely arrive in the Orient, and that would be a new trade route rather than going over land and going around Africa. There were ships that went around Africa to get to India and the Spice Islands and China and so forth. But Columbus had this vision of really sailing in a westerly direction, and he felt that God had really, in a way, opened that up to him. He felt it so strongly. And secondarily, he was motivated by a spiritual desire. He was a strong believer in the message of Christianity, and he really had a passion for the Savior Jesus Christ. And he thought to himself, "Well, in making this voyage, I'll get a chance to meet people who never heard the message of the Savior Jesus Christ." You know, Christianity was, of course, a Mediterranean religion. It really hadn't extended too much further in those days than the Mediterranean and the North African countries. So he was going to a new part of the world, and he had a real passion to share the Christian message as well as pioneer this trade route. And so that's what motivated him. He made four voyages, and in the end, he did establish some colonies. Because Spain wanted to get a foothold in those territories, and they were after gold. Isabel and Ferdinand believed that they should search for gold. And in the early voyages, there was no gold found. There was gold found, and the voyages that came after Columbus, because he passed away, but the ships that came back from the areas that he discovered and semi-colonized came back with just enormous amounts of gold. And of course, much of this gold ended up being in the Vatican. But it was that was probably the best investment that Ferdinand and Isabel ever made, was financing Columbus and his three ships.
But there was a spiritual side to Columbus in the sense of, you know, for example, he said it was the Lord who put it in my mind. You know, I could feel
That's
his
right.
hand upon me to do this.
Yes.
And then even when he landed at these different places, he gave Christian names. So,
he certainly did.
You know, the English equivalent would be, you know, Holy Savior, Christmas.
That's the meaning of San Salvador,
the Trinity,
the first island he landed on. So he erected crosses in his early voyage. He erected a cross on every island that he visited and explored.
By the way, that there's a picture of that in one of the eight gigantic pictures in the U.S. Capitol, in the rotunda of the Capitol. There's one of the pilgrims. There's one of the baptism of Pocahontas with her Christian name, Lady Rebecca, and there's one of Columbus planting a cross.
Oh, we have a great history. Jerry, we have such a great history. We have such a deep Christian history, and we pay tribute to that history. And it's really the enemies of Christianity, the Marxist-driven movements that have done so much harm to our great heritage. We're not perfect people. Columbus wasn't a perfect man. There is no perfection. You know, there's no perfect person. God only has sinners to work through. But Columbus, if you did a sort of a balance sheet analysis of what he accomplished versus, you know, the negative side, and it was primarily his crew that may have been tough on some of the indigenous people because they were fighting for their lives. Don't forget that. They were facing hostile people. And you don't meet hostile people with passivity. So, but he got a bad name for that, and people that overshadowed the good that Columbus accomplished. He really, whereas he didn't discover the United States, he opened up the voyages, to North and South America. And England finally got into the fray. You know, they were kind of latecomers. The French and the Spanish were ahead of the English, and it was really the Pilgrims and then the Puritans who left England and who largely colonized the eastern seaboard. Well, of course, the Pilgrims were in Plymouth, the Puritans were in the Boston area, but then there were subsequent Christian colonists who came, and they colonized the eastern seaboard of America. And the Dutch were involved, and the British bought out the Dutch interest in Manhattan. It was the Dutch that controlled Manhattan, and the English acquired Manhattan from the Dutch. And so we had 13 different colonies. All of them were Christian colonies.
Yeah, and the bottom line is, you know, no Columbus, no Jamestown, no Jamestown, no Plymouth, no Plymouth, no Boston, and it just goes on from there.
That's right.
Okay,
that's right.
So tell us about what you know about Howard Zinn, because Howard Zinn, the man who wrote a People's History of the United States in the early 1980s, was an avowed Marxist, and
yes,
he really turned America off on Christopher Columbus. I mean, Columbus is like Hitler Jr. or something.
Well, it's very sad. I was getting my PhD at Boston University when Howard Zinn was teaching there, and I chose to audit his class. So I went to his class, not for a grade, but to basically stand up to him. And he was fair with me. He always, when I raised my hand, he would call on me. And I would try to fill in the gaps on the People's History of America, because he focused only on the negatives. And he exaggerated and overstated the negatives. And he did that with Columbus. He had nothing positive to say about Columbus, when, as you have discussed, Jerry, there are, you know, there's a lot to appreciate in Columbus, not only what he did in terms of opening up the new world to Christianity, but, you know, to who he was as a person. You know, he had a real, genuine relationship with Jesus Christ, and he wanted to share that good news. That's very powerful. We're reminded of, at this particular time, you know, Columbus had something in common with Charlie Kirk. Charlie Kirk was driven by wanting to share the good news with people. And look what's happened since Charlie was martyred. We have a renewed interest in Christianity. Turning Point USA has 50,000, I believe 50,000 new chapters being requested. I mean, it's incredible. But that's how the early church was founded. It was founded by martyrdom and persecution.
But
we should all take heart that the good news is ahead of us.
And so, as far as Columbus, what you'd like to see is a renewal of people to appreciate him. And by the way, I mean, even, for example, I'm from Chicago, and in 1892, they had the Columbus Exposition or whatever. It was a big, big deal, and, you know, and was a huge, you know, celebration and so forth. But it was the 400th anniversary of Columbus. By the time you got to 1992, Columbus had been mugged, as, you know, one critic put it. And most of that happened, you know, in the, you know, post-World War II era.
Well, probably mostly in the 60s, I think, you know. Really, if we want to understand, you know, how our country...
And by the way, we've got about 20 seconds left.
Okay. Well, I think that we are really at a turning point in our country now, the likes of which I haven't really seen before. So it's an exciting time to be alive. It really is. And I think the best is yet ahead of us. I think that people are waking up. And they are turning back to the roots of our country, which are Christian. You know, we are a profoundly Christian-founded country, profoundly.
And on this point, we'll have to end, but I'll give you a website. It is rediscoveringamerica.net. Scott Powell. Thank you, Scott, for being with us.
Thank you, Jerry.
Sure.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now.